From the horse capital of the world, the great city of Lexington, Kentucky, welcome to Red Barn Radio. Wherever in the world you're listening, join us as we celebrate the music of Kentucky. Tonight, Red Barn Radio presents an evening with Boogertown Gap, coming up on Red Barn Radio.
Peaches in the summertime, apples in the fall. If I can't have the girl I love, I'll have no love at all. Fly around my pretty little miss, fly around my daisy. Fly around my pretty little miss, you almost drive me crazy. I had a big fine horse, grain to feed him on. Pretty little miss, stay at home, feed him while I'm gone. Fly around my pretty little miss, fly around my daisy. Fly around my pretty little miss, you almost drive me crazy. Standing in the door, her shoes and stockings in her hand, her little bare feet on the floor. Fly around my pretty little miss, fly around my daisy, fly around my pretty little miss, you always drive me crazy. Pretty little miss is sweeter than brandy wine. There ain't no girl in this whole world who's prettier than mine. Fly around my pretty little miss, fly around my daisy. Fly around my pretty little miss, you almost drive me crazy.
Red Barn Radio is brought to you with the financial support of LexArts, Lexington, Kentucky's Arts Council, creating a great American city inspired by the arts. Visit Lex, Lexington, Kentucky's Convention and Visitors Bureau. Planning to visit Lexington or just looking for more information, Visit Lex is on the web at visitlex.com. We're more than just bluegrass.
Good evening, and welcome to Red Barn Radio. I'm Brad Becker, associate producer and the host of Red Barn Radio, and I'd like to thank you one and all for tuning in to Red Barn Radio show number 501. Tonight we welcome to the Red Barn Radio stage Boogertown Gap. Ruth Barber and Keith Watson are a wife-husband duo from Sevier County, Tennessee, which includes places you might know like Gatlinburg and Pigeon Forge. Ruth and Keith specialize in the music that was played and sung by early pioneers and settlers of the Great Smoky Mountains and vicinity. Please welcome tonight's guest to Red Barn Radio stage, Boogertown Gap.
Thank you.
Hush, little darling, don't say a word. I'm gonna buy you a mockingbird. Say, darling, say. If that mockingbird don't sing, I'm gonna buy you a diamond ring. Say, darling, say. If that diamond ring turns brass, I'm gonna buy you a looking glass. Say, darling, say. If that looking glass gets broke, I'm gonna buy you a billy goat. Say, darling, say. Say, little darling, would you marry me? We'll build a house by the old oak tree. Say, darling, say. Building a house by the old oak tree. Three little babes sitting on our knees. Say, darling, say. Us alone. Say, darling, say. They'll go off and leave us alone. Two old coots in a happy home. Say, darling, say. You got a banjo and I got a ring. You pick a tune and I will sing. Say, darling, say. We'll make music like never's been heard. We'll put the shame on the mockingbird. Say, darling, say. Hush, little darling, don't say a word. I'm gonna buy you a mockingbird. Say, darling, say.
You are listening to Red Barn Radio, and we have with us tonight Ruth Barber and Keith Watson, who are from Sevier County, Tennessee. I thought it might be nice to begin by telling the audience something that I think will surprise them. It certainly surprised me, which is how and especially when you all came to old-time music.
I was actually a biologist with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, stationed in Asheville, North Carolina.
Keith Watson.
I was feeling pretty darn good about life at that point, and I had always wanted to learn how to play banjo, so I started learning to play Scruggs style, three-finger picking. So I played that for a year and kind of got used to it. Didn't thrill me a whole lot. But then a fellow bird conservator of mine came over one evening with his open-back banjo that he had made himself, I think, in Oregon when he lived out there, and his fiddle, and played us some of these really, really old tunes. And it's something that we had never really been exposed to as adults, to know how significant it was with the history and the culture of the area. So, it just struck us. And from that point on, I put down my banjo picks and started learning clawhammer-style banjo and had a hard time finding somebody to play with in Asheville because they were always busy.
You mean always performing?
Always performing or always busy doing something, gardening or whatever, you know, how the people in Asheville are. So I asked Ruth one night, why doesn't she learn to play the guitar so she can play along with me? So she did. Yeah. And that's kind of how that all came about. So we just sort of immersed ourselves in that. And then we had the opportunity to move back home to Sevier County in Pittman Center. And there we just sort of started playing music and have been doing that pretty much for about the last 10 years. Yeah. you.
You were how old when you actually started picking up old-time music?
50 or 51.
Wow.
Yeah, kind of late in life, but you know, some of the best things happen later.
Yeah, they do. It is an unusual story, though. And also because the two of you seem so adept at it, it's like, did you do the home DVD course, how to be an old-time player and look like one and move like one and play spoons like one?
Not at all.
No. I guess it's just kind of natural with this. Everything about this music has sort of seemed natural, which is one reason why we really enjoy it so much. It's not really an effort. It's just fun all the time.
I love the story because I remember so well when I first was turned on to old-time music, you know, when I first heard that happening, and especially when I first participated in it. Did you feel that experience awakened something from your family's musical past?
For me, it did. I grew up in a musical family.
Ruth Barber.
And so I knew some of these old songs, but in a very city-fied version.
For example, you mean from records or?
No, from my grandmother. She was born in 1888, and she was a piano teacher at Brown's Women's College when she was a young woman. So she was very musical and made sure all of her grandchildren took piano lessons, plus one other instrument, plus could sing. When we were together, all the cousins, we were always singing. And so I learned some of these songs, but in a very pretty, lilting voice, rather than in the old mountain style of singing. And then I went on to college, majored in music, classical flute. So when Keith asked me to learn to play guitar, my response was, "Where do you blow in it?" Because to me, a stringed instrument is just very foreign.
Patty, won't you have some? Patty, won't you drink some? Patty, won't you have some good old cider? Patty, won't you have some? Patty, won't you drink some? Patty, won't you have some good old cider? You be the gray horse, I'll be the rider. We'll go to Watson's to get some cider. Patty, won't you have some? Patty, won't you drink some? Patty, won't you have some good old cider? Cellar, get a little wetter, up from the cellar, feel a lot better. Patty, won't you have some? Patty, won't you drink some? Patty, won't you have some good old cider?
If you've just joined us, tonight we're with Boogertown Gap on Red Barn Radio.
So have the two of you really become students then? Is it part of your hobby and habit now?
Yes, it is. And we do a lot of educational programs within school systems and things like that. We're able to share this old history with young people who have no idea about their history. We have them sing along. We teach them some small lyrics, or we take lyrics with us. We take two washtub basses with us, so we have two kids at all times playing washtub bass. Aww. And then we take some spoons and some rattles and things so they can play along and sing along, and it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, we're also asking them questions as we go through our little information bit on each song that we're playing, if they know anything about this era, like, you know, when was the Civil War, or, you know, what is another name for the fiddle, or, you know, what do you string a fiddle bow with, and things like that. So it's an interactive kind of setting where the kids are actively having to think about their education, because they're involved in a two-day program called Environmental Education, and this is just part of the cultural part of that environment. So,
what age group do you find is most engaged with old-time music?
Around the 11, 12, 13.
Yeah. Fifth, sixth grade.
Sixth grade, yeah.
Through eighth grade, yeah.
But once they get into eighth grade, though, they start getting a little bit shy about participating and being a little more maybe self-conscious about participating.
That is really the magic of old-time music, you know, is that you're participating with others, and you've got five guys in an old-time jam, you know, playing the same guitar part, and fiddlers all playing in unison and listening to each other. It's just great.
Well, this song starts with a story, and it starts back before the Civil War. It's a true story, and it takes place in the mountains of western North Carolina. There's a young man, he's 17 years old, he plays the fiddle, and he's got a girlfriend, and she's an old married woman of 14. Her name is Mrs. Annie Foster Melton, and her husband is the town cobbler, and in those days, a cobbler made shoes, not pies. Well, the Civil War broke out, and this young man took off and was gone for 3 years. When he came back, he took right back up with Mrs. Annie Foster Melton where he'd left off. And she said, you know, I don't want my husband to get suspicious, so I think you ought to take up with my cousin Pearline, that's spelled P-A-U-L-I-N-E. Well, he thought that was a fine idea. Well, then he met their other cousin, Laurie, and don't you know, he took up with her too.
Busy fella.
Yeah, he was. Well, one day Laurie tells Annie that she and this young man are going across the mountain to Tennessee and get married. And that's the last time anybody saw Laurie alive. Her horse came back riderless. Her body was later found in a shallow grave, wearing shoes that had been made by Mr. Melton. Well, Annie confessed to the murder. She said, I killed her, but they'll never put a rope around my pretty little neck. She was right. They let her go. Well, Pearline, she was one of those people that liked to be in on whatever drama was going on. Do y'all know people like that? So she confessed to the murder. Well, she couldn't give him any details, so they let her go. Well, this young man knew the heat would be on him, so he took off across the mountain to Tennessee, got himself a job working on a farm. But eventually, in 1866, the law caught up with him, hauled him back to North Carolina, and put him in jail. He sat in that jail cell for 2 years, always professing his innocence. They finally hanged him in 1868, and this is our version of the song he was heard singing from his jail cell before they took him to the gallows. Hang down your head, Tom Dooley. Hang down your head and cry. You killed little Laurie Foster. You know you're bound to die. You took her on the hillside for to make of her your wife. You took her on the hillside, and there you took her life. You dug a grave 4 feet long, you dug it 3 feet deep, and rolled the cold clay over her and tromped it with your feet. Hang down your head, Tom Dooley, hang down your head and cry. You killed little Laurie Foster, you know you're bound to die.
Bound to die.
Tomorrow I'll be dead, though I never even harmed a hair of poor little Laurie's head. In this world and one more, reckon where I'd be if it weren't for Sheriff Grayson, I'd be in Tennessee. Hang down your head, Tom Dooley, hang down your head and cry. You killed little Laurie Foster, you know you're bound to die. Tom Dooley, hang down your head and cry. You killed little Laurie Foster, you know you're bound to die. Hang down your head, Tom Dooley, hang down your head and cry. You killed little Laurie Foster, you know you're bound to die.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So is your approach to old-time music to play tunes authentically?
For the most part. Sometimes we'll throw in a little modern lyric in something.
We adapt the tune or the song to sort of our style and our feel of it. So it may come out on one end a little bit different than what we learned it as or how it was written down or something. But that's just our spin on it and our interpretation of the tune or the
song.
Yeah.
Keeps it alive in different ways. I loved hearing Fisher's Hornpipe. You did that in a way that I'd never heard before.
Uh-huh.
It was really neat. I like
cool.
It. Really cool.
Yeah.
Really cool.
There's not much old-time music around our area. It's all been sort of transformed into a popular country and bluegrass form there.
Any elements of the history of that area?
In the late 1800s in Sevier County, there was a very puritanical group of people who wanted people to conform to their sort of moral law. And if they didn't, they were going to somehow try to punish them. And this group became known as the White Caps. They wore white hoods over their heads. If they identified anybody in the community, and in fact, the community that we live in now, Pittman Center, was one of the first episodes of these White Caps taking some action against a woman who they considered to be undertaking immoral activities. They went to her house and they basically whipped her and told her to leave the community, and if she came back that they would probably kill her. And so these were the White Caps. And this went on for a couple of years throughout the county. And I have to tell you that all these people were my relatives because I'm related to everybody in that county up there. And so after a while, though, this vigilante group raised the ire of a lot of other citizens who thought people had a right to do what they wanted to with their life. And these folks became known as the Bluebills. And the Bluebills and the White Caps used to actually have little running feuds and kill each other and stuff in ambushes and things like that. And it all, I think, culminated finally in a couple of murders that occurred along the French Broad River in the north end of the county when two men, my cousins, murdered an entire family and were caught doing it. And those were probably the last people that were hanged in Sevier County. But that pretty much ended the feud between the Bluebills and the Whitecaps. Nobody really knows why, unless they just got really tired of just killing.
You describe these groups, the Whitecaps in particular, as just a zealous, more than a racist group.
Oh no, they weren't racist at all. I don't even know if they were religious. I don't know that they were affiliated with any denomination. They had a moral law that they wanted people to live by. when wherever they got their moral source from, if it was a religion, I'm not really sure.
Wow. Yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah, it is.
Coming up, more Red Barn Radio with Boogertown Gap, recorded live from the Performance Hall at Arts Place in Lexington, Kentucky. We're back with Boogertown Gap after this break. This is Red Barn Radio.